WRKC is proud to present the third season of The Adventures of Harry Flynn. The Adventures of Harry Flynn is written, performed, and directed by King's students. We now present our 25th episode, Case Files, Volume 2.
The waves crashed softly on the beach as I sipped softly at the light mint julep in my hand. The sun was setting into the ocean for the first time in weeks. I felt...
Hold on. Who thought it would be a good idea to write a case file for Deborah?
That was me, sir. I thought it would expand her character. Give her some more appeal.
She's in Acapulco, you idiot. We can't devote half an episode of Deborah on the beach.
I don't know. I think it's kind of good.
Get me a story with something to it.
Well, I've got one for Bernadette Kinsberg.
The lady cop? Fine, run it.
People have told me 1,000 times that this city ought to depress me. My mother's been on my back to move out to the country since the day I got a job with the department here. But to me, looking out these Rain Street windows, I see all the good, law-abiding people moving on while the corrupt take over. I hear the government's working on some kind of bomb that can blow a whole city into the sea. And while this city'd make a damn good place to test it, I won't be one of those people who turned and ran when things got bad. So that leaves me here, sitting behind my desk, pushing papers while the rest of the force is in chaos, trying to reel back in a prison break.
Officer Kinsberg, may I speak with you?
D.A. Murdoch was the latest in a long string of district attorneys. They have an unfortunate habit of ending up on the wrong side of the defendant's box. This one seemed like he had his head in the right direction. I don't see any reason why not.
You've been doing some exceptional work these past couple of days.
Thank you, sir.
I received your request to be transferred back to street work and want to grant it. But you understand it's complicated.
Because having women on the force looks bad?
That's part of it. But there's also your previous connections with the Colizonis.
With all due respect, I can handle myself, sir.
All right. We've called in some favors, and some officers from other districts have been made available to us. Officer Weiland?
Yes, sir.
The woman he called in wore her badge like a sign of glory. She seemed like the type that thinks the job is all about the glory, which is still better than the ones who think it's money.
Officer Kinsberg, this is Sandra Weiland. I'd like... I'm sorry, I'm getting a little sick. I'd like you to show her how we do business around here. You've got Squad Car 9 in the 3rd Northeast Quadrant.
Thank you, sir. Murdoch handed me the keys and then left me and Weiland to get ready. I got the gun out of my desk. All right, let's get going.
Right down to business, then? No getting to know your partner?
Not a temporary one.
That's a nice way to greet someone coming in to help you out.
Look, I'm sure you're very good and dedicated, but I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to put bad guys back where they belong. Does that work for you?
Absolutely. Lead the way.
Maybe I'd been harsh with her, but I really was not looking for a partner. It makes sense to go out with someone at your back, but I didn't like getting pulled into the whole relationship kind of side to it. It'll cloud your judgment when you need it most. I got into the driver's seat and Weiland got out the file of convicts.
3rd Northeast Quadrant?
That's the one. Any sightings of our lost boys?
Well, everyone and their mother seen Giovanni, but that's to be expected. Other than that, not a whole lot that's all that reputable.
Figures that Murdoch wouldn't send us somewhere interesting. Anything that isn't, or are we just making a sweep?
There's a mechanic that says he's fixed a car with bullet holes in it. His description matches Heartthrob Herbert.
She read me the address and we drove over while I reminisced on a time where gangsters didn't have such pansy-sounding names. What kind of guy names himself Heartthrob? We got to the mechanic's place and pulled up in front.
Hello. Welcome to the Car Fixers. We fix your car without bothering with snappy slogans or names. How can I help you?
I showed my badge as Weiland consulted the file.
We're looking for Mr. Blaine. Is he here?
To police?
Yes.
We're not here looking to cause trouble.
Let me check if he's here.
When the police show up, they are almost never welcome. This is especially true when there's not already some kind of emergency going on.
Sir, there's a couple of police here to see you.
Huh? Did you tell them I'm here?
No. I said I'd check for you.
Yeah, tell them I'm not in.
I'm sorry, Mr. Blaine isn't in. I thought he might be in the back, but he's not.
Oh, yeah? Who are you talking to, then?
Just to myself while I looked.
That's a lot of talking to be doing.
I do that sometimes.
I turned to Weiland to discuss with her briefly. He's back there. But if he's not willing to talk, there's not much we can do.
Hold on. I've got an idea. Take out your gun and cover me.
I tried to grab her arm, but she was already in motion, pulling her piece and pointing it at the mechanic.
Hands up where I can see them, now! Stand away from the counter!
What did I do?
You heard me. Hands up, now!
Weiland.
Keep those hands up! We have reason to believe that Paul Blaine is being held against his will. If you make a move to stop me, you will be treated as hostile.
Keeping her gun pointed at him, she walked to the door and kicked it open. Blaine was inside with both of his hands up.
Hold on. I'm here. No need for guns.
Weiland put away her gun and gave me a satisfied look. I reminded myself that punching a fellow officer of the law was looked down upon. Mr. Blaine, we'd like to ask you a couple of questions.
All right, but I don't have all day.
What should have been a couple of easy questions was like pulling teeth. and Wyland all the while had a grin like the Cheshire Cat. Still, by the end of the conversation, we had a location.
I was surprised to hear him talking about going to a bar, given that his car was all shot up. But I'm positive he said he was going to the side door.
If you're looking to hire someone to engage in some tricky dealings, the side door is about the best place in the city to go to. Well, either the side door or the courthouse, but this is a slightly different kind of dealing. We changed into street clothes at the station and then headed to the side door in my own car. Squad cars tend to spontaneously combust when they park too close. I sent Wyland around the back and walked into the foreboding chaos, quickly making my way to the bar.
What can I get for you?
Whiskey sour and a couple of answers.
Whiskey sour is $1.25, but answers tend to be a bit more.
How's 10 sound?
I'll get you two of the sours to start.
He gestured for me to move down the bar to a less public seat and brought me two drinks. I put down Alexander Hamilton's face and picked up one of the glasses to fit in a little better.
So you, had a couple of questions?
I'm looking for Heartthrob Herbert.
I'm not sure 10's enough.
Like hell it isn't. Just tell me where to find him.
Look, sister, you seem like a nice girl. You don't want to meet Heartthrob Herbert.
I used my piece from the pocket of my coat just enough for him to see that it was pointed at him. I could handle myself. Where is he?
Jeez, you try to help someone out. In the back there's a couple of rooms. He's in number 3 playing poker. He doesn't like being disturbed.
I'm sure I'll manage.
And, he's got a funny sense of humor. With his name, I mean.
With that little tidbit of useless advice in mind, I made my way to the back and looked for room 3. After a bit of searching around, I managed to find it. The door was closed, but a quick check to the handle showed it was open, so I let myself in as quietly as I could. Luckily, they had music going.
3 9s!
Ah, damn it. I had 2 queens.
And full house, rack 'em up!
I had a good view of the 2 men at the table, but not the third. The third's voice sounded somewhat familiar.
Why do I even play with you?
Why, you say I'm cheating?
Nobody's saying that, Herbert.
Damn right, nope. Hey, who's there?
Heartthrob Herbert turned his head and our eyes met. The barkeep is right. Heartthrob was not the word for him. He had a scar along his cheek that drew his mouth into a grotesque frown, and his eyes were little sunken black holes filled with malice. But more importantly, I realized I hadn't checked Wyland's picture, or I'd have known that the man I was looking for was someone I'd dealt with before.
Bernadette?
Hands up now, you low-life scum.
Whoa, Herb, you know this frill?
Yeah, we met. But when I met her, she was getting a job making pizzas. The hell are you doing here?
Keep your hands up. You're coming with me. Tell your friends to stay in their seats or I'll kill you.
Aw, boys, hold on a second. Let me sort this out.
He walked closer, his imposing height pushing me back towards the door. At his belt was a club, almost like a nightstick. The very club that 4 years ago he'd used to kill my partner before my eyes.
You know, when you walked into Julian's Pizza looking for a job, I knew you weren't on the level. I mean, did it pay off? I mean, you brought me in, but was it worth it?
Damn it, stand back or I will shoot.
You stepped down back then, I wouldn't have killed her, you know. We could have settled it. Hell, you might be sitting on a paycheck from the big guy himself.
Damn it. In the rush of memories, I'd lost track of his friends. Both of them now had their pieces on me, and I had my back to the door. Part of me wanted to pull the trigger and take Herbert with me. Maybe blow his heart out of his back and give the newspapers a good headline.
Put down the gun.
We'll shoot too, lady. Come on, just drop the gun.
You know what? I'll make you the same deal I offered you before. Put down your gun and leave us, and I won't try to find you. Don't. And one of us leaves in a body bag.
Hands up, now!
What the?
Apparently, Wyland had somehow found another door to the room and decided to make her entrance. She kicked the door in and spun in. When Herbert's friends didn't cooperate, she fired, and from that distance, she couldn't miss. For a moment, Herbert was stunned, so I took my chance. I slammed his face with the side of my pistol, and he stumbled, swearing. Then I charged forward and hit him hard at the chest, and he was down. His head smacking against the table and sending cards flying everywhere.
Ah, she shot me. Ah, it hurts.
Stay still or I'll shoot again. We've got a squad car on the way, but we should move that one out.
Let's bring all 3 in. I'm sure there's something we can get them for. The car got there and we loaded in the 3 bleeding men. There were good shots by Wyland, enough to take them down without much risk and in a tense, close combat situation. Sounds like Herbert'll be getting another scar on his face from my hit. Murdoch was very pleased with my performance, and I didn't tell him Wyland had done more than half of it, and she didn't ask me to, because I had been wrong about her. It wasn't about the glory or the fame. It was about cleaning up the streets and making them a little safer for tomorrow.
We'll return for part 2 of Case Files, but first, a word from our sponsor.
Oh, I'm a weak and vulnerable woman. Doo-dee-doo-dee-doo.
Hey, Toots, this is a stick-up. Give me all your loot.
Oh no, that brute just ran away with all my money and important personal documents. Whatever shall I do?
How many times has this exact same scenario happened to you? You're walking down the lane, minding your own business, when out of nowhere someone accosts you and takes away all the possessions you hold dear. Well, fear no more, frightened citizen. How would you feel if I told you that, for a small introductory fee, you could be under the watchful protection of a highly trained Japanese samurai?
I would say how interesting, and please go on.
It is, and I will. Rising Red Sun Incorporated has just introduced its newest and most exciting security measure yet. Imported Samurais! For a small fee of one of your favorite LPs, RRS Inc. will provide this introductory samurai package. This baseline coverage consists of 8 hours a day of protection from a real, honest-to-goodness samurai. But if you act now, we'll upgrade you to the extended samurai package. That's 24, count 'em, 24 hours of samurai protection. And every once in a while, we send someone in to poke him with a large stick to rile him up a little more.
How interesting!
But don't take our word for it. Why don't you ask some of our satisfied samurai customers?
I was afraid of living in a big city. Luckily, RRS Inc. provided me with Kikiyashi here, and I couldn't feel safer. On that note, I'd like to extend a sincere apology to the Wachowiak family. Mrs. Wachowiak should have known better than to look Kikiyashi directly in the eye.
Before I hired my samurai, I received incriminating photos, hate mail, and death threats almost daily. I'd been through impeachment proceedings no less than 4 times. Now, thanks to RRS Inc. and Hiroyuki, I'm a 12-term incumbent.
But wait, there's more! If you call within the next 20 minutes, you'll receive the Platinum Club Samurai benefit. That's 2 samurais watching you all the time who are secretly embittered rivals, but can never break the bond of honor they have sealed. Just take a listen to one of our Platinum Club members, Mr. Hank Walton.
Hi, I'd like a pound of ham, thinly sliced, and a half of American cheese. Yeah. Alright, yeah. Yeah, ham. Thanks.
Remember that little scenario from before? Now let's see how it plays out with an RRS samurai.
Oh, I'm a weak and vulnerable woman. Doo-dee-doo-dee-doo.
Hey, Toots! This is a stick-up! Give me all your loot!
Fear his Japanese steel. That's Rising Red Sun Incorporated. 1-800-RISING-SUN. That's 1-800-RISING-SUN. All samurais are non-refundable.
We now return to part 2 of our case files.
It was pouring out. Absolutely pouring. As I looked out of the window of Harry's temporary office onto the damp, desolate world below, I couldn't help reflecting on how badly things had been going since that A1 nutjob Joel had let loose 2 of the biggest crime czars in the city, Henri Gusteau and Giovanni Colazioni. Now, one of them had reserved themselves a nice pullout in the morgue, who knows where the other one could be, and almost a quarter of the criminals they let loose have been captured. The rest are left to run rampant as disgusting little pockmarks on the face of this not-so-untouched city. Huh. This monologuing stuff is actually pretty fun.
I'm back, Marla.
Harry came back, soaking wet and a little worse for the wear from his shift. I walked over to him, arms outstretched, but changed my mind halfway over, settling for a light pat on the shoulder. We both stood in uncomfortable silence for about 15 seconds.
So, how was, you know?
My day? Fine. It was fine. Yours?
Boy, let me tell you.
He took off his hat and flung it onto his desk. Next came the trench coat, hastily flung onto the floor next to my makeshift bed. He went to his desk, poured himself a tall glass of gin, and slumped in his chair. He looked like a man defeated.
We're about to nab 3 low-level enforcer types, but no word on Colazioni yet. I'm telling you, Marla. I'm tired. Damn tired.
He pounded the glass of gin in one go, wiping some of the refuse that was fortunate enough not to make it in onto his tie.
I've been working this beat for 6 years. I've never seen anything close to this. It's madness out there.
Well, at least you're making good headway. 3 criminals in one day.
It was supposed to be 4.
What do you mean?
Well, we found 4 of them together out by the wharf, waiting for a shipment of counterfeit bills. Carlos Straight Edge Spumosa, Vincenzo, Gary Lemons, Gagaguchi, Tommy Carter, and the bills are all in police custody. But as we're tackling Gagaguchi to the ground, Luca Snake Boots Abendino ran off into a waiting car.
Hmm. From what I could remember from my file, Luca Abadino was no low-level enforcer. Abadino was a gore-crazy hitman, a go-between from the capos of Colanzioni's administration and your common god-fearing street thug. He was eccentric, even for mafioso, and had a penchant for wearing snakeskin cowboy boots, hence the nom de crime. Mobsters aren't the most creative bunch of people. Although, I wonder, who came up with the name Gary Lemons?
Gagaguchi, they've got the weirdest names! Hey, Marla, you okay?
Yeah, why?
Well, you've been kind of staring glassy-eyed at my filing cabinet for about 45 seconds. Wait. Are you monologuing?
No. I just happen to like the color of the metal, that's all.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Well, Harry, I'd love to stay and chat, but it's time for my shift, so...
Can't you call off tonight?
Come on, Harry, we've been over this. You know they need the additional force out there.
I know. It's bad out there. And I don't want anything bad happening to you on my watch. Besides, I miss you out there.
Sorry?
I'm sorry, I had something in my throat. Have fun, I have some papers I need to file.
Alrighty then. Bye, Harry.
Bye.
Insensitive pig. But damn it, he's on my mind something fierce. I'm getting myself all worked up over nothing. He's a friend. But if he is, why can't I stop thinking about him? Is it because I admire him from a professional standpoint, or is it something more? These thoughts filled my head through the soaking wet walk to the police station and on patrol with a new guy, Officer Ringwald. I wouldn't have pegged him for a cop, more like an excessive comic book reader, and he had the acne and hygiene to prove it. He tried talking to me, but I was a little preoccupied.
So, Marla, how are you tonight?
Fine.
So, some storm, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I was wondering if you would like to go to dinner with me after patrol to...
I'm sorry, I can't patrol tonight. It's not you, it's me.
Story of my life.
Just drop me off here, please.
You'll get all wet out there. Why don't you stay all nice and warm in here? We could talk about our feelings?
Just, please. Ringwald dropped me off about a block and a half away from Harry's temporary office. I got there, doubly soaked, having not dried properly from the first time, and agitated. When I got upstairs, I saw a note on the door addressed to me. It read, "Went to get groceries and liquor. Let yourself in. Be back soon. Harry." I sat down at his desk, closed my eyes, and got some not altogether well-needed but well-enjoyed shut-eye. I don't know how long I was asleep before the phone call came. I bolted upright, scrambled to find the receiver, and almost knocked my teeth out, bringing it up to my lips. Harry Flynn Detective Agency. Marla. Oh, Marla Newman speaking.
Marla, why aren't you on patrol with Officer Ringwald tonight?
Personal reasons. How are you, Mr. D.A., sir? You sound a little sick.
No time for pleasantries. Have you seen Harry today?
Yeah, quite a bit ago, though.
But not in the past 2 to 3 hours.
No, can't say that I have. Why?
Because we've just received reports of a man who fits Harry's description being hauled into an abandoned automotive warehouse.
What's the address?
2413 West Stifcotson Street.
That's quite an address. I'm on my way.
Wait, I didn't authorize.
I had a feeling that was an awful long time for eggs and whiskey. I swiped one of Harry's guns from his desk and ran out to where I knew his car was parked. I didn't have the key with me. Should have fished around in the desk a little bit more. No time to get it now. I broke open the window with my elbow. From there on in, it was a simple process of jerry-rigging the car to get it to start. I drove off towards the abandoned automotive warehouse as fast as the bucket of cogs and rust could take me. In retrospect, it probably would have been faster to ride a small purebred dog there. As I drove faster, more and more of the rain kept coming in through the gaping hole I'd made, soaking me more and more. Great. If I ended up with a cold because of this, I swear to God I'm giving it to Harry. Before I got even halfway there, the car came to a slow, lurching stop. I tried to start it a few times and then figured it wasn't worth it, walking the last 0.7 miles there in pouring, biblically proportioned rain. Lord, I hate rain. About 10 minutes after abandoning the car, I saw it. An old, dilapidated warehouse with matted, dim light coming through the window. I crept up slowly, trying not to arouse attention. When I finally got to the window, I saw Harry, tied to a chair and beaten badly. Two thugs were making sure his hands and feet were securely bound. Meanwhile, the shadowy figure in the back was busying himself with shining his shoes meticulously. From the looks of them, they were made out of 100% authentic snakeskin.
All right, there we are. Look at that. So shiny you can see your face in them. Why don't you take a look? Hold it for me, boys.
Yeah, boss.
Your thing, boss.
I just said that.
No, you said yeah, I said sure thing.
Let's not get into semantics here.
Just shut up and hold him for me.
Sorry, boss.
Quietly, I drew my gun and walked over to the door. I kicked it open, shooting the two thugs directly in the kneecaps. Next, I turned my gun on Abadino, but I saw that he already had a Thompson submachine gun drawn on me with a twisted smile on his face.
Oh, no, you don't, missy. I'm gonna waste this here Private Seamus. And when I do, Colizone's gonna make me a capo. And ain't nobody gonna stop me.
Is that why you kidnapped Harry? What about the counterfeit bills down at the wharf?
Aw, that wharf thing was just a decoy. I could give a rat's ass about straight-edge Carter or Gagaguchi. I just wanted Flynn. I hope he likes Switzerland, because he's about to become Swiss cheese.
He turned the gun towards Harry. In a fit of impassioned rage, partly because of my feelings for Harry and partially because of that god-awful pun, I pistol-whipped the back of Abadino's head, knocking his Tommy gun out of his hands.
Ugh!
He staggered, and I leapt onto him, hitting the back of his head with the butt of my gun until he collapsed. I dragged him outside, handcuffing him to a pipe outside of the warehouse. Let the authorities sort him out. I went back in, untied Harry, and drug him outside into the rain. Heh. It rains on the just and unjust alike, I suppose.
You know, this is the second time I've been saved by a woman. It's getting to be a habit.
I looked down at him in the pouring rain, his one eye swollen, his lip cut, and I thought I couldn't love him anymore if I tried. I bent down and planted a tender, caring kiss on his bruised lips. He looked up at me and smiled as best as he could.
Marla, I think you should know I'm pretty fond of you.
Me too, Harry. Me too. We stayed there, looking deeply into each other's eyes until the backup squad arrived to take away Abadino. Harry and I walked back to his car in the rain. Somehow, I didn't seem to mind it anymore.
This has been The Adventures of Harry Flynn, presented by WRKC. This week's episode, Case Files Part 2, was written by Brandon Leon Gambetta and Lucas Tomasacci. Our cast today was, for Part 1, Brandy George as Deborah, Bernadette, and Ditzy Girl. Brandon Leon Gambetta as Barkeep, Thug, Mugger, Hank, and Senator. Drake Nestor as Director, D.A. Murdoch, Assistant, Gangster, Commercial Announcer, and Samurai No. 2. Lucas Tomasacci as Announcer, Writer, Blaine, Heartthrob Herbert, and Samurai No. 1. For Part 2 of our episode, the cast was Brandon Leon Gambetta as Harry Flynn, Thug 1, and Darling Penelope. Jennifer Momenzada as Marla Newman. Lucas Tomasacci as Announcer, Thug 2, and Illness Double for Robert Murdoch. Mark Zurich as Officer Ringwald, and Luca Snake Boots Abandino. Guest starring Stephanie Gallis as Officer Wyland and Vulnerable Woman. Can't get enough Bernadette Kinsburg and Marla Newman? Find us on Facebook or log on to harryflynn.wikia.com for episode summaries, cast lists, trivia, and MP3s of previous episodes.